Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Hello again, I'm Anne Wilson, and it's great to welcome you to this podcast series in which I will continue to interview my guest, Sarah Weiser. Emerge Australia podcasts deliver interviews with a range of individuals and patients and clinicians, as well as researchers impacted by and associated with ME/CFS and long COVID. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and pay my respects to elders past, present, those emerging, and those listening to this podcast. Welcome. Once again, you will have listened to Emerge Australia's Ambassador Bloom singing her beautiful rendition of John Lennon's Imagine. We try to think of something else, but we just love this piece of music. And we hope you enjoy it as well. It's great to welcome Sarah Weiser back to this podcast series as we continue to work through her book, Too Tired to Think, An Intersection of Hope and Reality for Those Who Battle with ME/CFS and Their Carers. Sarah, welcome back.
Thank you, Anne. Lovely to be here.
So today we're going to cover navigating your medical reality, building the team of support you need, holding strong when faced with the reality of our currently cracked system. Would be wonderful if our health and shadow health ministers could listen to this. Mm-hmm. So this is an important issue because I think the most asked question and the greatest quote, most familiar quote to me from people who call us with ME/CFS is, I can't find a doctor. I can't find someone who understands how to diagnose, manage, and treat my ME/CFS. And I think that that's the indication of the cracked system that you're talking about, Sarah, that leaves patients out in the cold, on their own, made to feel as if they might be making it up because it's not real, or suggesting that they go and do things that will actually be harmful to them and make their conditions worse. So I'm going to hand it over to you to start off by telling us more about navigating your medical reality.
Thank you, Anne. Yeah, I wanted to start and share a snapshot that I've got in my book. And it's from a person expressing the feelings of how they felt when they were meeting with a new GP for the first time. I was exhausted, but I made the appointment anyway. I had feelings of cynicism and hope that battled it out inside of me. I'd been let down so many times in the past by medical practitioners who I previously had placed on a high pedestal. After fighting ME/CFS for so many years, these pedestals were no more. And I knew that it was a macabre lucky dip of experiences. But this time, my luck was in. I found someone who not only had some great suggestions, but they show genuine empathy for my situation. It's comforting to know that there are some true gems out there. Now I ask, can you relate to that? Unfortunately, I feel like anyone who's been going through a long-term and chronic condition can probably relate to that line. It's a macabre lucky dip of experiences there. And it worked out well in this scenario that I've just shared. But for too many times, for those of us that are battling a predominantly invisible condition like ME/CFS or long COVID, it just doesn't work out for us positively when we come face to face with the people who are meant to be giving us the care that we need. And yes, and that is what I mean by we have these cracked medical systems. Look, it's exhausting, and that's exhausting at best, and it can be really soul destroying at its worst. So this episode is all about how we can shine a light on the struggles that can be faced by getting the care that we so desperately need and deserve, and then some ideas around how to go about getting this.
Well, that's really great, Sarah. I'm really looking forward to your thoughts on this important issue, because from what I see and hear, it's challenging. And if you actually also think about it from the perspective of the clinician, I don't think it's that clinicians don't want to help patients. They feel pretty powerless given that the education that they've had doesn't really address energy limiting disease, and the science hasn't necessarily given us the answers of how to conclusively diagnose, manage, and treat these patients. And what that results in is a relationship between the GP or the clinician and the patient that is not a match. What the clinician suggests to the patient just doesn't help, and patients go away feeling soul destroyed that they haven't been heard, that they haven't been seen, and that they've been given very, very little that can help them. In a world where we have instant everything, you know, instant coffee, instant gratification, instant everything, we've become used to going to a doctor who gives us a prescription. We go and have it filled and then we get better. That is not the reality for people with ME/CFS, long COVID, or other associated conditions.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, I've had such a range of experiences with all the different people that I've gone and seen over the years. And, you know, I can comment on my experience here in Australia navigating with ME/CFS. And I think my experience is probably going to be quite typical. And the typical experience is all of these wrong turns, bad advice or no advice. There's been expensive solutions. Often they just do not work either. And at times I've even been blamed for not getting better, despite doing everything that's ever been asked of me. So all up, it's just been a bit of a marathon and grueling process that's drained all of my resources. And by resources, I always talk about time, money, but really importantly to me is my energy. And often when I'm going to these different appointments, that might be the only thing that I was able to do in that for that day at least, but even for that week. So my energy was the most important thing that was being taken advantage of. Now, I've also had some great experiences, and honestly, I do hold on to those experiences, and I want to always recognize the great practitioners who have heard me. They have shown the empathy that I needed. They've treated me like a human, and they've actually had some solutions that worked. I'm really grateful for everything they've been able to do. Now, what I've been able to understand from my own experience and from others is The reason why it's so hard, and and you hit the nail on the head and you say this is instant gratification. There's also that aspect of there is, it's a little bit vague when we go to the practitioners. Often we're talking about a different set of symptoms for each person, and they can be really vague in nature. And so, the first step that medical practitioners do when you come to them and you say, I feel exhausted. We don't say fatigue. We say, I feel exhausted. I feel tired all the time. I just cannot live my life at the moment. We've got other symptoms like post-exertional malaise. We don't even know what that means at the beginning, right? You just say, I just feel whacked out. I just do the least little thing and it just knocks me out for days at a time. And I've got brain fog. I can't think clearly. I'm so foggy. These are really vague symptoms, and it's usually their responsibility to make sure that there's nothing more serious underneath. So what doctors will normally do is, and they often do this part well, is they go, all right, great. We're going to send you away. We're going to get a whole heap of blood tests. We're going to check you out. They might send you to other practitioners, maybe a neurologist if you've got brain symptoms. They will do all of their diagnostic tests that they can do if they're taking you seriously. And then they get all these numbers back and they seek the answers from the numbers that are in front of them. Unfortunately, and this is my experience, the numbers don't reveal anything wrong. I was within the normal range for most of the tests. And this is where the cracks start to appear. Because once you're in that normal range, then what do they do? And this is the normal experience that I've heard people say. They've been checked out, they've had their bloods done, the test shows they're normal, and the medical practitioner in front of them can't see anything wrong with them. But on the other side of the fence, when you're sitting in that chair, you've got all of these debilitating symptoms. You are exhausted. Just getting there was such a marathon. You can barely sit up in your chair. You can't keep a thought in your brain. You can't remember what you did yesterday. You go, in your own mind, I was always saying, can't you see how bad I feel? Like, what is wrong here with me? What is going on? Now, depending on the practitioner, they may have suggestions that help, or they may just dismiss you. My first doctor that I saw said to me, he said, you've got anxiety and depression, and you should take a pill for that. Here's a piece of medication. I was also, my ME/CFS was triggered from a period of great stress. So that was also the cause. You're really stressed. You should go see a psychologist. Or even, you just need to focus on getting more sleep. It's like, in my mind and in other people's minds, you're like, how much more sleep can I possibly get here? So this is the so-called diagnosis, and it leaves you feeling that feeling of lo lost when you're the most vulnerable that you've ever felt in your life.
And I've heard that from so many people. They feel lost. They don't feel heard at all. And often there are no other options given. The feeling of just I'm just not seen. And yet I often use the example of someone coming to a doctor to say, I've got a lump in my breast. And I'm thinking, how would that person feel if the doctor had a feel of the lump and said, it's just a lump, don't worry, just go home, have a rest, it'll go away in time. I mean, there would be public outrage at someone not suggesting that a woman have a mammogram and that, this may be nothing, but it could be something serious and we need to do something about it. But when someone is so exhausted that they can't get their head up from the pillow, that they have got PEM where they can't even walk to their letterbox and back without crashing. Somehow that is less significant than someone walking in with a breast lump. And it's like it's just not as important And it's because people feel and pick up on that, that what I'm feeling isn't as important, that they go away feeling totally dismissed, not heard. And then you have the gaslighting that comes in, and then you have anger and the frustration and the feelings that, well, maybe it's because I'm a woman, because we know 75% of people with ME/CFS are female. And then, you know, it all sort of then swirls around in your mind, and you just feel as if you don't matter. It's not important. And on the other hand, you've got these clinicians whom I actually relate to who actually don't know what else to do with the patient. And they are equally challenged, saying, well, we've done all the tests. There isn't anything that's showing up. Unfortunately, for a lot of patients, they don't have the additional funds to maybe go and see an integrative GP or practitioner. These people often have some other tests that they do, like gut microbiomes and other tests that may point to bits and pieces of treatment that could be tried. But most GPs don't do that. Most GPs are not integrative GPs. Patients don't have the extra money because a lot of them have had to give up work have no other income other than, if they're lucky, disability support pension. And so, you know, it goes around and round and round in this vicious cycle. And, you know, patients keep thinking to themselves, I've been told that they can't find anything wrong with me. Why do I feel like this?
Yeah, it is. It's one of the most frustrating things. And there's so many good points there. And you start to second guess yourself. You start to feel like, is it just me? Am I the only person in the world feeling like this? And you maybe even wish that you had something physical, tangible, that you could show, that you could actually then have a treatment protocol that is written down that you can follow. It also goes with the people around you, that, you know, people will be nice and understanding for only so long when you've got something that's complex and hidden as it is. Yeah. Look, I had a couple, I wanted to share a couple of the different run-ins that I've had, let's call them run-ins, with different people in the medical system as they are, because it's such a challenge to find that right person, the right doctor that is for you, someone who understands ME/CFS and someone who can actually help. And so what, you know, we call this, and what would be the ideal situation would be, you would have a primary care doctor that is your central point of contact for all things that are medically related. And then they can help you understand, okay, I want to try this other type of therapy, or I want to try something else, but they can be your central point of contact. But getting that in place, that can be one of the hardest things that happens.
Yeah.
So when I first was diagnosed, and I've shared that it was from a very stressful time, and I was still trying to work, and I went to my normal GP who I had a relationship with. And, you know, this GP, not knowing too much, told me it was anxiety and depression and stress, and I should take a 2-week holiday, a 2-week break, which I never went back to work after 2 weeks. It just wasn't ever going to happen. But, you know, he was, as you say, doing his best. That's all he knew. But I was just getting worse and worse. And I would consider that I was quite okay at that time financially, because I had been working. So after about 6 months of not being able to work and not understanding, I did see as an investment to go to an integrative doctor at that time. And I can't remember exactly how I found that person, but I just knew that I needed something more than, you've got anxiety and depression and you need 2 weeks holiday. So I found this integrative doctor in the city. It was such an effort. I remember having to go there. I couldn't take the train because I couldn't walk to the state from the station at that time. So I had to drive, find parking, all of the time, money, and energy costs that go along with seeing an integrative person, an integrative doctor. But it was so good because she said the words chronic fatigue syndrome to me, and she gave me a label. And I know it's ME/CFS, but at the time she said chronic fatigue syndrome. And it gave me something to Google. It gave me some way of just going, oh, maybe this isn't something that's made up in my mind. And then she said, okay, we're going to put you on all these different supplements. And I think I was on like 15 different supplements at one point in time. And a lot of them were crazy expensive and only available from the practice that was off her business, of course. But you do anything, you're really desperate, so you do anything. So I took all of these supplements. I did everything she asked of me, and I went back regularly, even though it was such an effort. And she kept pushing me, like, are you feeling any better? Are you feeling any better? It might just take a bit of time. Are you feeling any better? And you'd kind of try and dredge up a little bit of like, yeah, maybe I'm feeling a bit better. But the honest answer was I was not. I was probably getting worse, if anything. And I remember one day I just went in there and I cracked and I started crying and I'm like, I'm not feeling any better and I feel terrible. And they're like, I've got all these new things happening and blah. And I'll never forget, she just looked at me like I was something that had walked in under her shoe. She had no emotion on her face. And she didn't treat me very well in that session. But afterwards, she did a report and she wrote that I was putting it on in that report.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm just going through the emotion of it still. I still feel the emotion because it hits me in so many ways. Like the breaking of trust on the one person that I had put all of this hope into. I felt so vulnerable in that moment. I felt it attacked my very integrity, saying that I would actually make something like that up. And, it was just one of the most hurtful things that's ever happened in my whole life. Just hands down. It also was, destroying of any hope of income I might have, like ongoing, or just there were so many bad impacts that came from that. And it was, it took me a long time to trust anyone in the medical industry again. But that's she delivered for me a real lesson, because that's when I realized how important it is to actually have the right medical help on your side. And not only that, but the right people around you, the people who actually believe in you, who are not just going to dump on you, who and not allow yourself to be so attached to one person to put all of your eggs in that one hope basket. And I think this is what's needed when we're dealing with these long-term complex conditions. You're probably going to need a whole team of people around you in a lot of ways, but we can become so, I guess, we put these doctors up on a pedestal and that's what we're taught to do. But like any profession, there are going to be good doctors and there are going to be bad doctors. Some are good at their job, some are not so good at their job, maybe, or some that are good for you and some who are not good for you. And that's what we've kind of got to weed out. Now, I wanted to share another story that kind of what happened after that time. And, it, as I said, it took me a little bit, but I'm like, okay, I've got to pick myself up. I've got to straighten my back here. And I've got to find a doctor, hopefully someone who's going to be local. And honestly, funds were getting low. I couldn't afford this integrative practice anyway. So I started looking for a GP. And what I did was I would go to them. I was a little bit gun shy, so I'd go to them with something different I wanted to talk to them about. And I'd ask them, like, I've also been diagnosed with ME/CFS. What do you know anything about this? What do you suggest? Do you even believe in it? Was one of the I can't believe that's what I had to ask at this time. We're talking 8 years ago now, though. And I found one doctor who said to me, he said, no, it doesn't exist. It's like, and so I'm like, well, what do you think is wrong with me then? And he said, oh, it's just undiagnosed anxiety and depression, which is what my first doctor had said. And so I started to see, okay, there are going to be some people that understand this and some people that are just dismissing it. And I probably felt all of those emotions at the time when I first heard that say from him, the devastation and whatever. But he did me a little bit of a favor because I started realizing that I really had to dig deep here and find someone who was actually going to be worthy of my time, my money, and my energy. So I started that why I think I continued at that time. I continued the search for a GP and I ended up finding a gentleman who had his own practice here, very local to me. It was great. I was able to see him for 6 months and then COVID hit and he retired, which was unfortunate. But there was someone else in his practice who had a similar philosophy, and she is my doctor that I have today, and she's a GP. But she is someone who reads widely. She put me on low dose naltrexone way before it became mainstream. And she found that out because she'd read some journal articles and they'd found some efficacy in some of these studies. So what I started to see is that there are some good GPs around who read widely, who can give me the respect that I deserve, who will look at me and who actually work with me and take the time it takes to go through this as a process. But it took so much to get there. And as I was saying, it's the time, it's the money, and it's the energy that you have to expend to get to find what I would call these gems. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you actually make the comment, not all medical professions are created equal, and you do need to find your gems. I think that that's just so true. For organisations like Emerge Australia, finding good gems is very difficult as well. We have worked very diligently for the last 4 years in trying to build a database of GPs who we have had contact with, who have either attended a clinical education session that we've run or who've attended plenary sessions conducted by our former medical director, Dr. Richard Schloeffel. And we've put them on a database and sought permission to have either their practice or their name listed on our website. So for anyone who is looking for a gem, whilst we can't guarantee that everybody on our website has got the level of skill and sophistication in diagnosis of ME/CFS. It's about making phone calls, asking questions, and satisfying yourself that the people in your area are people that you may want to go and visit. But the reality is that it would be wonderful if we could guarantee that every GP on our database has had that comprehensive education of ME/CFS, but we can't. There are 40,000 GPs in Australia, and educating 40,000 GPs, especially when most of those will have had no training in their undergraduate studies, is a huge challenge both for our smaller organisation, but also from a financial perspective because it costs a lot of money. But needless to say, your experiences, Sarah, of finding that gem of a GP who does read widely, who does understand. You know, it's not common practice out there in the community, unfortunately. And we are certainly working very, very hard on advocating for greater education for our GPs so that we can reduce the negative experiences that patients have when they go to seek for help.
Yeah, thank you, Anne. And thank you for all the work that you're doing around that space because it's so important. Just having that one person that believes in you makes such a difference. Look, I'll qualify that. Honestly, finding this person, I probably had to go see maybe seven or eight other GPs before I
Yeah.
found or found the first guy who was willing to try some new things with me, and then he put me in contact with her. But it's how hard is it to for a normal person, like normal energy person, to go to eight different people and see what they're about, let alone someone who's going through, such a hard condition. I really recognize that it wouldn't it be great if we just knew who were the gems in our society?
Yeah, absolutely. And the questions that you've listed, which I know you're going to go through in a minute, really helpful. I would suggest to our listeners that you write these questions down. So that's why I'm mentioning them now, because if you're listening to this podcast, either grab your phone or your laptop or a piece of paper and a pen.
We could put them in the show notes, maybe.
And write these questions down, because I think it's a great idea, particularly when you're going to a database of GPs, maybe like the one that Emerge Australia's got. If you're going to be ringing a practice, the following questions that Sarah's going to discuss are really helpful and do the work for you, in eliciting the information that you need in order to choose the best GP for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna tell you like what I think is what you need to evaluate each practitioner before you go to them, or in that first kind of like relationship developing stage, because it's going to be an investment of your time and your energy and your money, and you want to make sure you get the most bang for your buck here. So I've got four questions that I've outlined, and maybe we can put them in the show notes because I know it's hard to take notes as we're going. But basically, what you're going to do is you're going to ask each practitioner if you want to use these different questions, and it's the idea is to understanding are they going to be the right doctor for you. So there's four different areas that we cover. First up is their competence in being able to handle your condition. And so the question I ask is, have you treated patients with ME/CFS or long COVID before? Simple question, but it gives them a chance to reflect on, do they even know what these conditions are about?
Yeah, and what is your experience?
Yeah, what is your experience with these types of chronic long-term conditions? Then the next question is around understanding their tolerance for ambiguity, knowing that so many of the, I guess, the symptoms that you can bring may be of the vague nature. So the question you ask is, how would you treat complex conditions with unclear symptoms? Again, trying to understand, do they have an appetite here for lasting the distance with you and not just trying to peg something on the nearest diagnosis? Sometimes we find people might focus on your lack of sleep and go, you just need better sleep. But you've got a whole suite of symptoms and you want them to consider all of them. The third question is around their patience in being able to last the distance with you. Because as we know, if you're lucky, you might be dealing with this for a few months, but for most people, it's going to be years. So the question to ask is, how long on average does it take to find a treatment that works for ME/CFS or long COVID? And then the last question is around, are they keeping up with the latest information? And this is really, really important, I think, because there are so many new treatments, new things they may try if they read a little bit more widely. And so the question I can ask is, have you read any recent research around ME/CFS or long COVID that could be relevant for my situation? So they're the four areas that I would suggest might be a good start for evaluating each practitioner. And honestly, all you need to do is start small, because the aim would be just to have one good doctor in your corner. And then with this in place, that's when they can start to to help you understand what is the other areas of care that you might be able to get. And as a complex condition, you're going to find there are other areas of care that you might need. I look at this and I can understand now through my experience that it's taken a multidisciplinary approach. And in my book, I outline the three elements around this, which is around getting medical support. So that's working with that primary care doctor. But lifestyle changes across aspects such as your diet, working maybe with a nutritionist, a dietitian, maybe a naturopath, and over time, maybe even the physical activity side once you are at a much advanced healing level. And then also the emotional support, such as getting help for the psychological impacts, seeing practitioners like counselors, your psychiatrists, and psychologists.
So, we often don't talk a lot about lifestyle changes with people with ME/CFS because so much focuses on the physical and on the general fatigue and post-exertional malaise. But I think lifestyle is an important factor. And I'm glad you've mentioned nutrition. I've glad you've mentioned physical therapy or physiotherapy because they're often quite overlooked. And they say that you are what you eat, and particularly if you're impacted by a condition that limits your ability to move because you're so fatigued, then it's probably really important that you also focus on the quality of what you eat. Now, we haven't focused a lot on that in recent times at Emerge Australia, but please watch this space because we're going to be doing far more than we have in the past on diet, nutrition, and lifestyle. However, one of the areas that, of course, everybody recognizes that has been, almost done to death, that is so damaging to people, is the impact of graded exercise therapy as a recommended treatment, and let alone cognitive behavioral therapy, because of course the implication is there that it's all in your mind. Do you want to talk a little bit about those two areas, Sarah?
Yes, I will. And thank you. I look forward to the nutritional support. I know I was my gem of a doctor put me onto a dietitian who had me try out a low chemical diet. And this is the chemicals that naturally occur in food. So it was a lot of white foods I had to eat, and you kind of went through this process. And I do remember that feeling of brain fog. It was like lifting a blind. Other people that I speak to say a low histamine diet works for them, or low FODMAP diet. There's so many different combinations of things that people find helpful. So it would be great to get some more help around that. But yeah, I found so many of the conventional treatments, and I'm holding up my fingers here to indicate that treatments that have been given might not be the treatments that are needed, because they can feel insulting. Like when I was first going through this stressful time and so physically affected, I was told it was anxiety and depression and told to go see a psychologist. It was almost like pushing me, go take some medication and talk to someone about it. And then you've got that awful, awful feeling of, oh my God, when someone says you've got to do some exercise. And you know in your heart of hearts that you cannot. That you've got this person in front of you saying, this is what's needed. And it's fraught with danger for anyone that's living with ME/CFS. And as the more you research about it, there is a substantial body of knowledge now that says any time that you have PEM present, the post-exertional malaise present, then doing, Too much exercise can be really harmful to you, and it can affect you in the long term. But what I've found and what we find that's commonly happens is that the symptoms of PEM is misdiagnosed. Doctors can see that, or therapists can see that as it's deconditioning, which is when what happens to your body when you've been sedentary. So you say, I've been fatigued, or I've been exhausted or tired, and I haven't been able to move as much, and they take that as like you've just been sitting around and you need to get out and do some more exercise. But I can tell you now, PEM is not de from deconditioning. PEM is from having ME/CFS, or long COVID. And we found that study upon study have shown this now. It can make your symptoms exponentially worse. And these are really bad symptoms, things like, the stress that's on your body and your mind, the pain that you're feeling in your body. If you overdo it, we all know that feeling of just absolute, I guess it's just not just exhaustion, the crushing fatigue, but the pain that courses through your muscles, the brain fog where it's just you can't think properly, and then the weakness that happens. And, I've always thought of PEM as now this flashing indicator. It's a warning light saying, you've done too much. I'm telling you, you don't need to exercise through this. You need to the rest. PEM needs you to pace and to rest. It does not need movement. So, over the years, as we know, we've heard horror stories. Graded exercise therapy has been, put into the standards. Doctors think that's what they need to tell patients who have ME/CFS. That's what they need to do. And even the best doctors, our GEMs, can get this wrong. Look, my current doctor put me onto a physical therapist way too early. And it wasn't like I forgive her, it's fine. But I think I've said before, I've always identified as this being a good girl. I do what's asked of me. And, I went through a lot of emotional pain having to go, okay, my doctor thinks I should do this, but I can't. And, am I just being lazy, or am I not doing what I meant to do? It was a really, it was a big thing for me to have to say no to my current doctor. But I just want to, encourage people to not be pushed into doing more than you can physically do. And if possible, don't feel bad about that. Don't feel bad about standing your ground, because you know what feels good for you. You know what your body can tolerate more than anything, more than any other person can tell you. And it might be that you have to do nothing right now. Or it might be that you're able to do some gentle movement, some walking, some like gentle yoga, or anything else. Some maybe even just like I know people who are bedbound can sometimes just do a couple of leg lifts, and that's enough for them. But the timing and how much you do has to be up to you. I don't think anyone can tell you, anyone can decide. And you need to decide this, because if you overdo it, as you're going to get whacked with PEM as the result. Now, you also mentioned psychology there, Anne. This is what happens too. What's harmful is that sometimes we rightfully resist being told to do graded exercise therapy, or just get out and do more activity. And then we get labeled as fearful or resistant and being sent to a psychologist. Just go to the psychologist. You can do some cognitive behavioral therapy and you'll get over your aversion to exercise or whatever. And that is just so insulting. It is just not right. It is not what we need right now. I don't want to be fobbed off to a psychologist. That is not the treatment that's needed. So you might start to see that I'm starting to, I guess, push a little bit of a narrative here of there's a theme here that, of standing up for yourself and being in the driver's seat of your own care, taking doctors off the knowledge pedestal that we might have put them on in the past. And, I really want to acknowledge that this can be hard to do at a time that you feel really weak and you feel really vulnerable. And it's really difficult. But you are the one who knows the most about your condition, about where you are at any one time. And you get to decide what's best for you. And I think navigating a long-term complex condition requires this of you.
That's so true. And as I was listening to you speak, Sarah, I was reminded of the words of our former medical director, Dr. Richard Schloeffel, who I mentioned before, who always at the end of his clinical education made the statements that he found that his patients were his greatest teachers. And, you need to be pretty humble in order to make that kind of an admission. But the reality is that you as patients have the best knowledge of your condition, and you are the ones who can educate and help to inform your clinicians about your condition and what you feel is best for you. I think the other point that you raised, Sarah, about not putting your doctor on a pedestal is just so critical. Doctors are just like you and me. It's just that they've gone to school and they've studied their craft, albeit for quite a long time, and they are people whose profession puts them in the healing category. So they want to try to ensure that what they do actually makes you better. So taking them off a pedestal actually puts them exactly on the same level as you are. They're just another person. They've had certain training. You may have had certain training in an area. And really, one of the things that I find is most helpful is in order to build a relationship with your GP, you just need to talk to them as if they're just another human being. Don't feel inhibited because they're a doctor and you're the patient. It's actually an equal relationship between doctor-patient. And if you can establish that equality of communication, it really, really helps to build the relationship as one of equals trying to work on improving your health. And that certainly puts you as the patient in the driver's seat. And it elicits a response from your clinician to want to do more. When you go into a visit with a doctor, because you might be incredibly frustrated about all the other doctors you visited who've maybe gaslit you or maybe made you feel that it's your fault, try to hold your frustration and your anger back. Because if you're angry at the clinician that you go in to see, chances are you might get an angry response back, and you don't want that. You want to build the relationship. And building a relationship happens best when you go in talking as equals. You've got a whole lot of knowledge about your condition that you need to convey, and you need to try to elicit from them the desire to, I really want to help this person get better. And it's so important to try to understand what it is that you can do that helps your GP to want to be able to help you, even if they may not have had a whole lot of experience. But you, as the patient, hold all the cards as far as the knowledge about your condition is concerned.
Yeah, it's a good point, Anne. It's hard, isn't it? Because you might have a lot of built up baggage that comes from all of those experiences.
Absolutely.
I know at the beginning I would cry in every single appointment. I would cry because they're asking me to talk about something that's so awful and so personal.
Crying is good.
Yeah.
Crying is good. Showing your vulnerability is good. It's not a problem. And most people will respond to genuine vulnerability in an empathic way.
And if they don't, I guess they're not the gem that you need. It is
Exactly.
actually, it's almost like part of the test, isn't it? In some ways, can they handle the emotions that you bring to the
Yeah.
yeah.
Rather than going in there angry, Showing that pain and exhibiting that value, vulnerability is actually a huge strength that is part of the power that the patient has.
I think it's important here. What we want is for each, like once we've found, I guess, the practitioner, the GP, your central point in contact, that one gem, once you've found that person that you want to have that long-term relationship, and it's a good word that you use there, Anne, is that relationship. It's long-term. Then I guess the next bit is to make sure that you are getting the most, your ba most bang for the buck from every time that you go to see them. And, again, the way that I evaluate that would be around my time, the money that I spend, the financial impact, but the energy that I'm giving out, because knowing that that's the real scarcity thing here. We're all operating on these really limited spoons. And to just attend the appointment and to travel there and back, sometimes it's the only thing that you can do in the day, or it evens up, uses up your spoons for the whole week. So I talk about how to feel as informed and prepared and empowered when attending these appointments and meeting with all these different practitioners, or meeting with your one practitioner as you can. So I've got a couple of tips here I wanted to give to people to see if there's anything here that relates, so that you can actually make these appointments the best that they can be for you. So the first tip I've got is about writing down as much as you can ahead of time. I've always got a sheet of paper that I'm writing for my doctor for the next appointment. And it's usually what I put on there is I put things like any research that I've seen, any symptoms that I've been feeling, anything that someone has maybe suggested, anything I want to talk to them about. Because having brain fog and feeling exhausted all the time just means that going to these appointments, it can be really hard. You get to the appointment, you sit there, and then you go, oh, what am I going to say? It's so hard having that sheet of paper. My GP is used to it. I bring my sheet of paper in, I've got my dot points, and you might even have a list of the medications and supplements you're already on, so you don't have to remember anything. It just makes it a whole lot easier. The second tip is around preparing your own research. Now, I'm not advising that you turn to Dr. Google for any of these, but there are so many sources now of good, I guess, good research that you can use. I found going onto these different online forums so helpful, because people are so forthright now in being able to say, I'm tried this. Has anyone else tried it? What do you think? Here's a product I've seen. Here's a medication that I've heard about. You can actually start to get the intel from other people and understand a little bit about more about what you might be asking from, something that's maybe extending what hopefully your doctor is widely read, but just extending and asking them about these different things that are happening. So preparing your own research, whether it's someone else might help you with that, or whether you do it yourself, can help you ask better questions and have a better conversation when you're in the room. The third tip is around challenging the diagnosis. And, this was at the early stages of going through this experience. And people saying, you're just depressed, you're just anxious. So when someone gives you a diagnosis of XYZ and you disagree, you might try a subtle challenge back to them, which may help them think in alternate ways. And so, I'll give you some wording for that. I've heard that XYZ is also a possibility, Can we also consider this? So it's a subtle challenge. It's just asking them for something a little bit different. The fourth tip is around taking trusted contact with you. I didn't do this at the beginning because I didn't have anyone that I could, but I could see how that would have helped, because just having someone else in the room means that if the doctor's coming at you with a lot of information, you've just got someone else there to help you take that in. And they can also be a confidence boost if you want to try and advocate for yourself, if you're feeling emotional, if you're feeling cloudy, if you've got brain fog, if you're just so exhausted. Someone else there to help with the messaging can be so nice and so helpful. I think you just need to be also very careful of who else you bring, just you don't want to cloud up the issue. but we're just talking about getting as much support as you can. And then the last tip is around never be afraid to change practitioners, change your doctors if you're not getting what you need. And, you know, Anne, you put it so nicely, and this is the message that we're saying here, is that you can be in the driver's seat, and, you know, there's going to be good practitioners and bad practitioners for you, people who get you, people who are willing to work with you, people who understand, and people who don't. And, you know, I don't want to waste my effort on those people. And, you know, it's just a better use of your resources to sometimes, rather than trying to persuade the person sitting in front of you of anything else, just to just go, even if you've had a relationship with them for years, to just go, no, you're not what I need right now. I need to find someone different. I know how hard that can be at a time when you feel exhausted and vulnerable, but I guess we're just looking at the long term here, trying to find the support that you need to support you in this long term.
Absolutely. Sarah, just before I wrap up this really brilliant session that was filled with so much wisdom from your own experience, I do want to go back to the point where you talked about having a trusted contact with you. And I just want to emphasize that, because what happens sometimes is you get so anxious, I think, sometimes about going and seeing a doctor, that you don't necessarily pick up the nuances of what you're being told. And there is really good research out there that actually proves this point, and says that this is a research study from years ago, and I'm sure that there's been more recent ones, but it says that over 80% of people who come out of an appointment with their doctor haven't got a clue and can't remember what the doctor said to you. And that's because you're so focused on what you need to talk about and what you want to get out of it, that you're actually not able to listen clearly, to fully sometimes understand what's being said. And that's no fault of the patient. It's just, you know, you want to get better, you're so anxious, and you don't always take it all in. Now, I'm not saying taking a trusted contact with you to every appointment, but there may be some where you say it might be helpful to have another set of ears there. So it's not necessarily for what you can say, but it's having someone else who's saying, right, I actually heard them say this. Did you hear that? And often you find that, you know, all of a sudden there's an understanding and a comprehension that's been communicated to you that you just missed in the appointment, in your eagerness to have your needs met. So I would suggest someone that you trust, who can listen well, but who's very happy to stand up and say, look, I think this is what they need. And of course, that's equally important to patients who go and see a GP because they need help to get onto the NDIS or disability support pension. Sometimes it's really helpful to have another person in the room there to help you advocate on issues that you might find difficult to raise with your GP. So that's just my comment on that one. Sarah, do you have any sort of final words that you want to give us before we wrap up this session?
Yeah, thank you, Anne. Look, I guess the message from today is that hopefully gentle encouragement just to keep going until you do find that right care for you. And I know how difficult it can be at a time when you feel that fogginess and the exhaustion. And hopefully This is the start of like giving you a little bit of some tips, some shortcuts, but the idea is to be in the driver's seat, to have that feeling that you're actually getting the support that you so need and you so deserve. And I say it's just like fossicking. You just need to sift through, keep the gems, and where possible, ditch out those rocks, ditch out the soil, the rocks, everything else that's getting in the way of the gems. And, I feel like medically there is some hope here, and it's not all bad news, especially since we've had so many long COVID patients that have come through. And I'm starting to see, it's hard to read them, but I'm starting to see so many journal articles. I live here in Queensland. Griffith University and UQ both have programs where they're looking into different medications and different ways of treatment. So hopefully there's some new things that we might try on the horizon here. And you want the person in your corner who is actually going to read those research articles and be willing to try some of those different things that are coming through. I also always recommend the online support groups, where there are large numbers of people. There are people from all different parts of the world who are so candid in sharing what's working for them, sharing research studies, sharing the treatment protocols that they've started and with each other, or asking for recommendations and giving their own personal experiences. I think they also offer that valuable emotional support that's been missing for so long with our community. So I guess there's some hope there with medically. This is a new era for diagnosis and treatment for ME/CFS and long COVID. But until then, I'll ask you, how can you ensure that you're firmly in the driver's seat of finding your own medical care, finding the support that you both need and deserve?
What a wonderful question to leave us with, Sarah. And I think that, it's one really worth pondering on and making notes about. You'll be able to hear, rerun this recording for yourself. Take notes, because I think there was some absolute pearls of wisdom in this particular episode. So thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing with us again today. And next we come to our last episode, which is about possibilities and what comes next, the ways others have found they've grown from the experience, incorporating more mindfulness into your days, acknowledging your own resilience, and you do have a lot of resilience, and how to better maintain perspective when faced with such difficult circumstances over the long term. So it sounds as though next episode's going to be very meaty as well. Sarah, thank you so much. We are really learning a lot through the sharing that of your book with us, and we look forward to the final chapter. So we urge you all to please stay tuned and keep watching this space. For those listening, you can find Sarah and all the details of her book at www.sarahvisor.com/too-tired-to-think. Her book can also be purchased directly from Amazon. As always, today's podcast is part of an Emerge Australia series that we're delighted to bring you, that records interviews with patients and people of influence to ensure the voices of those with ME/CFS are seen and heard. This is a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by over 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least 400,000 more with long COVID. Tune in again for our next interview, and don't forget that for more information, you can subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, where we are able to provide you with lots more information about the work of Emerge Australia and the latest about ME/CFS and long COVID. You can visit our website, on www.emerge.org.au for that information.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one, and I hope someday you'll join us and the world.